Hey everyone, it's Travis.
I'm Ryan.
And this is, as always, the wheat and the chaff that you are listening to. Thanks for joining us today, and we've got a couple of key things that I feel we can just launch right into with. It kind of carries over from a little bit of our last conversation. I don't know if you noticed, but America's worship leader.
How do I not notice? I mean, I notice everything he does.
Has been approved. He actually got permitted. We're talking Sean
Foyt.
I heard somebody say it.
I was like, that's how you say it.
Not Foocht.
Yeah, I'm like,
I figured it had to be something.
Maybe re-spell your name
because
it's weird.
Yeah. Anyway, America's worship leader, Sean Foyt. Move over Chris Tomlin. Step aside Matt Redman. Sorry, Darlene, no longer you. It's Sean Foyt, America's protest worship leader, has filed for a permit and was approved for a worship protest at, I believe, like the National Mall in D.C.
Yeah, and he's already been there once, I think.
Right, but this is coming off of Nashville, where he kind of did the more classic Foyt, which was to just kind of show up in a city and do his thing. And then leave before the cops can start arresting someone.
Yeah, exactly.
He's actually gone for the permitting. But what's more importantly is he's been approved. Now, I don't actually know what goes into holding a protest. I've never formed my own protest.
No.
So maybe they just get approved regardless of the situation. But, like, my understanding is, from what I read, is that he was approved for a protest. They are expecting up to 15,000 people to attend. And DC has basically said, hey, we're going to, basically say, hey, here are all the CDC guidelines, here is everything, but we're not there to enforce anything. Which means you can basically be guaranteed you're going to have 15,000 people crammed shoulder to shoulder. Because the permit says that there will be spacing and there will be all this different stuff and there will be mask requirements, and there will be a table with Bibles where they'll also have a nice sign listing all the CDC stuff. But if history has proved anything from Sean holding these protests, it is going to be a shoulder-to-shoulder crammed-in event taking place in D.C., and I just want your thoughts on that.
And, he's probably going to say, hey, turn to your neighbor and
give him a hug and a kiss.
give him a hug and a holy kiss.
Breathe the breath of God.
Breathe the breath of God upon him. Mm. Breathe the Holy Spirit.
Remember Benny Hinn? Remember Benny Hinn when he would blow into his microphone in order to see everybody fall around them? And then, all of his acolytes would start blowing around them, and people would, those are the things you shouldn't do anymore.
Do you think Kenneth Copeland's going to show up?
And blow away with the wind of God. I'm still waiting for the sequel to that. I'm waiting for the remix version of that song.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything from Copeland lately.
Because he probably realized wow, I was wrong.
Oh, dude, those are the craziest eyes.
Yeah, he's got some psycho eyes. But my thoughts are, Sean Foyt, please stop. Those are my thoughts. And I can't. I tweet to him and I say, can you please stop doing this? Because it just...
Is he too busy to read your tweets because he's too busy holding protests?
Probably. Because the problem... it's a problem. It's like, dude, we're in a national... a global pandemic.
Yeah.
Where this virus is really not slowing down any. Their numbers are increasing. And that's... the numbers... You can manipulate numbers however you want. And I know numbers are increasing in Massachusetts, and I think a lot of those are from the college students coming back and colleges opening up and things like that. So that's kind of expected anyway. But it just doesn't show loving your neighbor well. And that's the biggest thing that people are outside the church are looking at the church and going, you refuse to wear masks and you refuse to adhere to guidelines, so you're not loving your neighbor well, and I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And so that's my biggest problem with this. It's all... Because, as we've talked about on this podcast, truth is more perceived truth than anything else.
Yes.
Perception is everything, right?
Yes.
And so, for instance, our church, we usually do a trunk or treat for Halloween.
Right.
We're not doing a trunk or treat because it's listed on the CDC website as it's a high-risk activity. We're
doing a trunk or treat.
They're churches.
We have never done a trunk or treat.
They're the exact opposite. They've never done one.
We have never done one, and we were like, this is the year.
Yeah, this is the year. So I don't want to end up on our town Facebook page and, you know.
Yeah.
Now, and just be perceived as we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
We're doing something that's a high risk. So we're just doing a drive-through Halloween. Come grab your bag of candy that will be pre-packaged and all this stuff and safe.
Yeah.
So
we are doing ours basically in-house.
Yeah, you're doing yours for your
kind
church.
Of like behind
the
building to where it's not a big public thing. So we did have that same, in all seriousness, we had that same conversation of, you know, it's not, it's actually less of a safety issue because, you know, there's plenty of ways to hold a trunk or treat
or
do that kind of stuff. And, you know, kind of have all your distancing covered, have all of your various health and safety checks, have all of your compliance stuff, have all your pre, you know, it really is more about like, how do people see it?
Yeah.
You know, it's like our building sits just like yours, kind of like on a main road.
Yeah.
You know, where the front of the building is like, boom, you do anything out in that parking lot and you are basically putting a show on display. So we are moving behind our building and up around the corner, you know,
where
we got some trees and some various things to hide stuff. So that way no one can just drive by and be like, look at that church holding a, you know, X, Y, or Z massive super spreader event. So,
yeah. And I just want to know, like, with the Sean Foy thing, what is his motivation to doing these things?
Obviously to speak out against the oppression and persecution of the government against the church. How have you not read his stuff?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, the thing is, it's...
Listen, Chris Tomlin cowers in his studio performing, but Sean's out there for the people.
Yeah. My thing is, like, he is creating this narrative that I don't think really exists. But maybe only
the church is persecuted by its government. No,
because granted, I think there are some states, like I think California sometimes goes a little bit too far with some of their things. I think there's some other states that are trying to go a little too far with, like, you know, if you have a state that's allowing like bars to open and restaurants to open, but churches have to stay closed. I can see that as an issue, and I can see that as like the churches in those areas and the pastors in those areas saying, hey. This is not right. This is not fair.
Yeah.
Because I think there was actually a church in D.C. that basically filed a lawsuit against D.C. to say, you're having us shut down, but you're allowing all these other things to open.
Okay.
That is not fair to us. And they did it in a very, you know, I think a Christ-honoring manner, because I was kind of reading up on it. You know, they didn't do it as like defiant and say, we don't care what you say, fine as all you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just said, hey, this is not right. This is not fair, you know, because we are willing to adhere to these guidelines and things like that. So why can't we open because we're just the same as this, you know, and they're actually more of a higher risk than we would be. And so I think, but overall, like, I mean, I think I tweeted to Sean Foy one time. I was like, look, I was like, I'm a pastor in New England, and we've been able to be open for months. There is no oppression here. You know, you're just creating this false narrative that doesn't really exist. And, like, my thing is, like, I kind of want to, like, have him sit down with Christians who live in countries like India and China
right.
and the Middle East and say, all right, Sean, you talk about your oppression here. And I'm gonna guess that I'm gonna guess their reaction to that. They'd probably be like, "Are you serious? That's oppression." And then they share their stories of, "Yeah, our buildings are burned all the time. People throw
right? like that's the thing. Like, people throw bombs. Persecution is highly costly to them." I will say this. I will share this with you because I'm kind of having this discussion with a couple people, right? Which is. There comes this kind of discussion of, is this about, you know, rights? Is it about, you know, government oppression versus freedom? You know, is it about, you know, persecution against religious worship? I believe we have a mutual friend. I believe. We'll have to talk about that more off mic so that we don't, you know, criticize openly. I believe it's a mutual friend. If not, it's at least a mutual acquaintance that has some kind of connections to a lot of our friends.
Okay.
You know, basically shared the other day, he's like, I haven't put a mask on once during this entire thing. I've only been kicked out of one police station and one dentist office. You know, basically businesses just don't know what to do with me if I go in without something. No one usually has the guts to say anything. That kind of thing, right? And he's like, you know, here are my concerns, and I'll kind of briefly roll through them. And it's written, of course, by someone who he says he is an independent. The article definitely is not written by an independent. You know, and they go into the whole thing about, like, you know, mask wearing doesn't make any difference. They go into the whole deal of mask wearing actually could be dangerous for your own health because you're capturing all this stuff, right? And then they get into the, it's about social control, and it's about, you know, forcing people to try to conform to a certain look and a certain, you know, way of acting and being, and trying to basically let peer pressure, right, cause a certain type of behavior. You know, it goes on about irrational fears, you know, that really we're not supposed to be afraid of viruses because, you know, it goes on and on as it does.
Yeah.
And the problem that, you know, the problem we run into with it is, like, I feel like the people who say, oh, this is actually just about religious persecution or, you know, trying to curb a church's right to get, it falls into these same kind of arguments, which is, could it be true? Possibly in some areas, like, you might have, I mean, certainly you have certain areas, certain cities, certain local towns that may actually not have a very good relationship with their faith movements. Maybe not even, you know, just the Christian ones, right? Like, you know, a lot of times Christians seem to think they're the only people who get persecuted. But, like, actually there's a lot of different faiths in America that sometimes are, you know, kind of considered out there or pushed around based on their, you know, based on their views. And I was just thinking about this because I was reading this article, and then, like, not too long after that, like within that same day, I came across another article being posted by another acquaintance of mine, you know, who is not a believer. Like, he's a complete, total, you know, non-theist, right? Like, he's just like, this is all a bunch of, you know, fairy dust, right?
Yes.
And it's now, you know, going through this whole thing about, like, why are these people who follow, you know, fairy gods and fake, you know, this and that, why are they so determined to get together and breathe on each other, you know? And that's the kind of thing, right? It's like, so it's like, I'm not going to say that there's no town that maybe doesn't have, say, a mayor or a council who looks at faith movements or people of faith as kind of a little out there. But I think that this idea that there's this agenda of, you know, this whole thing has been driven by a desire to oppress the church is just totally bonkers. I think it's looking for a conspiracy where no conspiracy exists. And I think that's the problem that I run into with guys like Sean, you know, is that they're protesting. Number one, there's enough protests going on that are legitimate right now.
Yeah.
And for you to add your protests on top just kind of takes away from the legitimacy of these protests while trying to, like, up the legitimacy of yours. The fact that you do them without a permit, the fact that you kind of bait the local, either the local community or even the local police, into trying to respond to you and then, you know, show off, like, look how they came down and crushed our free speech. It's like, that's the kind of stuff that I have a real issue with. I wish, you know, Sean and churches and people would stop doing this stuff. But anyway, that was, Sean's back. He's going to D.C. If you want to jump in the car, hey, you know, we could go down.
No.
We could ride really closely together.
You know, as you're describing this, all I could think of,
we could just find a random stranger and crash on their couch.
We could,
like, yes. Airbnb, like, hey, why not?
I mean, as you're describing this, how he likes to bait the local authorities and, you know, raise his hands in the air like he didn't do anything wrong. It made me think of how Dennis Rodman played basketball.
Yes, yes.
He would just poke people enough.
Right. Like,
they would lash out at him and throw his hands up in the air.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, he didn't call for it.
Rodman did have an excellent career as a basketball actor.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, totally, like, if you ever watched Rodman, you know, love him or hate him, you could not deny the fact that the dude would just basically push until someone hit a breaking point, and then he would totally just oversell the response.
He would flop.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, I remember watching him, you know, the Bulls play the Jazz in those two finals, and he would drive Karl Malone insane.
Yes.
And Karl Malone wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
And Karl Malone would just lash out, and Rodman would throw the hands up.
Yeah, throw them back.
And Karl Malone would always get called for the foul, and Malone's face would be like, what in the world? You not see what he's doing
here? Yes.
But yeah, that's how I was. As you described this, I was like, he's like Dennis Rodman. He's like Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, no, that's you're totally spot on there. Leading into speaking of baiting and trying to provoke, presidential debate did happen last night. Did you happen to watch it, or were you too busy watching Daniel Jones?
I was too busy watching Daniel Jones
have his legs fall off from underneath him.
I was too busy watching Daniel Jones tackle himself.
You know it's a bad thing. You know it says a lot about your presidential candidates in your debate process when a 1-5 team or a 1-4 team goes up against a 1-4-1 team, and they actually get pretty good views. They get pretty good ratings.
I didn't watch the whole game because after about the third quarter, I was like, man, these two teams are terrible.
They are awful. They are so awful. Bad. And yet, at times, probably more interesting than the debate was. My family has been watching the debates simply because we're fascinated with how the whole process is coming together. I'm trying to watch it with the idea of like yesterday was basically watching two old guys who couldn't finish a sentence. Last time it was two old guys who couldn't finish a sentence because someone else was jumping.
It was the grumpy old men.
Right.
They're fighting each other.
This time it was just simply because they lost their train of thought halfway into the sentence, and a new train of thought would begin, and then that would also end, and a new train of thought would begin. And it was kind of interesting to watch it happen to both sides and realize this is how the next 4 years is going to be, regardless of who wins. It's going to be an old guy who at some point might be going senile on television in front of us. It was not the greatest debate.
Maybe we should lower the minimum age of president just so we can get a...
Or put a cap on the maximum age.
Yeah, put a cap on the maximum.
I'm okay with we probably don't need a 23-year-old being our president, probably.
No, probably not.
But cap it at 60, cap it at retirement age. Be like, hey, you got until your retirement age and then you're done. I don't know. It was a fascinating kind of debate because it was filled with that kind of back and forth. Where actually everybody was quite respectful. There really wasn't a lot of crosstalk, but it was definitely like this person would start a train of thought and then just kind of pause, lose it, and then jump, kind of do that fumble for whatever might kind of lock them into something that comes next, and then they would begin a whole new train of thought. I was a little sad to see that most of the questions, a lot of them were similar to the ones that came before, and I was kind of hoping for at least a new set of directions. But these are also driven by probably polls that say this is what Americans are most talking about. This is what they're most concerned with. So, part of me says I kind of understood it. It just meant that we retreaded a lot of ground from the last debate. New stuff that came out from President Trump in the wise maxims that he likes to speak was, my favorite was, I'm an expert on the wind. Brain pause. Excuse me. Brain pause. It kills all the birds. This was one of those kind of moments that I was crying. So they're going back and forth about solar energy. Joe Biden's talking about building windmills. President Trump's talking about why. It's again one of those moments where it's like in the context of it, he's talking about building windmills and how windmills can be part of the solution for clean energy. President Trump's trying to argue about how, this kind of energy is expensive to build. It's actually expensive to maintain. And in doing so, I'm pretty sure he's talking about the idea that the pollution of these new things or the cost of these is, I believe he's trying to connect it to its environmental impact. But the sentence came out as, I am an expert on wind power. Excuse me. It kills all the birds.
So maybe when he said the first part, I'm an expert on the wind power. Then he said, excuse me, he might have farted. And then he realized, oh, that's going to kill
him. There's so many things that... It was like one of those ones where he's like, I'm an expert on the wind. Excuse me, it'll kill all the birds. And it was just one of those where like all of our family just kind of looked at each other like, did he just say wind kills all the birds? It was humorous. There were a lot of those kind of moments on both sides.
I'm pretty sure wind and birds go hand in hand. Like, birds need wind to fly.
Yeah, it was
maybe not.
It was epically awful. Not as epically awful as the first time, but epically awful in its own new kind of way.
You know, it'd be interesting if he said that right when Daniel Jones fell.
Daniel Jones running like a bird, and then some wind hit him. Took him down.
I think he'll use that clip.
It's definitely one of those kind of... It was an interesting debate. It kind of moved slowly because there was not as much of the back and forth. So there's a lot more conversation, and there was, again, some crosstalk, but it definitely was not as... It was interesting because the first one just seemed to move so much faster, although my brain hurts so much more.
Well, this one, they had the timeout button.
Yes, well, that's
like,
the thing.
It's like, you know, guys, if you guys get out of hand, you're in the timeout.
Yeah, so each guy also would at times just kind of like peer out into the darkness. And it was kind of like, what are they looking at? Especially when the other guy was talking, it was like, I couldn't tell if they were trying to, like, look, get an eye of a staff or a campaign manager. I really wanted to know who was kind of along those sidelines, because it was almost like they would just kind of drift off for a little bit, and then they'd make eye contact with somebody, and then give, like, a wink or a nod or some kind of, like, a thumbs up to somebody, and then they'd, like, try to re-engage with wherever that guy was.
I think there's two options here. I think there's two possibilities. As pastors, we do this. When we have we forgot completely what we're talking about.
You look at that friendly face.
Someone even dramatic pause to let what we just said sink in, and in our minds are panicking, going, "Oh crap! I have no idea where I'm going
next. What did I just say?
Where was I going? I totally had a brain fart.
That could totally be it. Actually.
The second option is it could be that." It's like a quarterback looking for his offensive coordinator because he couldn't hear the play coming in. And they're doing the cards. They're calling the cards.
Up. Signs.
Or they're doing hand signals.
He's looking for the guy in the red jersey, you know.
They're doing hand signals.
Right. It totally had that look from time to time. Like, they would just be, like, going, and then they would just kind of, like, drift off for a moment and, like, try to catch it. And then, boom, and then we clock back in. But, again, half the time it would clock back in with a completely different train of thought or a new thought.
Well, maybe it's a third option that... they thought they were done.
That could also be a campaign. No, you gotta keep going. You gotta keep going. There's more to this.
Maybe it's like Tom Brady, and he held up the fourth.
Was that fourth down? We got that fourth. Do we have two fourth downs now?
Do I get another one? I don't know. I'm not sure. I forget.
It was entertaining. Let me see if I can. I remember having a good couple text threads. I'll just double check and see if there's anything I missed off of it, because it had some moments. It had some good moments. Oh, that was part of it. So basically, you could sum it up to two old guys. Joe's catchphrase being, "Come on, man." In, like, I don't know if you ever watched Arrested Development?
Yeah, we watched a little bit of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Joe Bluth.
Okay.
All throughout the series, one of his things was to basically have, like, feigned indignation at something and be like, "Come on!" And at this point, it was like he was hitting, like, Joe Bluth level. Like, achievement unlocked. He had achieved Joe Bluth level of, "Come on, man," to which Trump would then usually be like, "Oh, this is how, you know, you politicians always work. You want to, you know, talk about this instead of that. You can do better than that, Joe." And so, like, every time Joe's stuff ended with, like, "Come on," as if, and he'd be, like, very sarcastic. Joe brought the sass last night.
Oh.
But then Trump would basically bring the dig with, "Come on, you can do better than that, Joe. You can do." So it was this weird, like, shade throwing debate that didn't actually, like, we all kind of turned it off, looked at each other and went, "Did anybody get a better idea of what the next 4 years of our country might look like?" And the answer is no. But they were two guys throwing pudding at each other, or jello, or whatever old guys throw at each other.
I think they should do debates like, you know, in Hamilton, when you have the scene with Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson going back and forth. They should do debates like that, where it's like this rap battle.
Mics can be dropped
and all that kind of stuff.
The discussion I had with a couple friends last night is that it did feel, as the viewer, like you were the child caught in the middle of a divorce. And that they're both sitting in front of the marriage counselor making their case as to why they should get to keep you.
Isn't that what a lot of debates end up being?
I think so, but this one felt really weirdly personal to me. Like, it was like, I feel like I'm the kid. They're each trying to keep me. I think I want to emancipate.
I think I want to peace out.
Joe did have a moment where he talked about the middle class. who sit around worrying about the fact that their tires have gone bald. They may not have money for their next mortgage payment or to send their child back to community college. And I was like, that's the middle class? I was like, Joe, your middle class is really not very exciting.
That's where his campaign, that's where he's like campaign coordinator.
You may want to check that demographic because that
they're holding the P sign for polls.
And then he went out to go talk about his daughter going to some private university, and it was like you might have lost your kind of like I'm one of the people kind
of. I'm one of the middle class
with my apparently
and my daughter's
in a park car
and my daughter's going to Harvard.
My double wide trailer and Greendale. So. Yeah, it was definitely one of those kind of things. It was like an interesting debate, but not in a good way. Not because there was great information. It was more like, okay, well, they didn't openly, violently kill each other.
Yeah.
But nothing was really learned, and you just felt a little dirty after it was done.
Did you happen to see, and kind of piggyback off this, you happen to see what John Piper wrote?
Okay, I have not. I saw it went out.
I was actually quite surprised, being
the deep Piper follower that I am. I know that you're surprised that I didn't immediately just wake up and be like, "What is Piper written?" But it's how I start all of my days. Hello, wife. Oh, Piper. No, I'm sorry. I would never do it in that order because obviously Piper would not view. Never mind. I'm not going to go there. I'm just gonna stop. I did not see it yet. It's on my things to read later today because I've had a lot of people responding to it and sharing it, but I have not had a chance to read it yet.
It is very interesting because, you know, I think as Christians, even as pastors, it's a very kind of tumultuous election year because you just don't know. You're kind of wrestling. And we were talking actually a couple that.
Well, it's a question of who do you want to win? The whore of Babylon or the beast that rides?
Exactly. So we were talking. We were talking to a couple at our church after Sunday. We had our mask on and everything while we're talking. But and our friend Mike was, and he had such a great perspective on this that I never really thought. And we're both, Allie and I both are kind of like, we're really wrestling with this. We're not 100% sure. And Mike was like, I think that's actually the best place you can be. Because I think I'd be worried if somebody was 100% sure that this is the guy.
Yeah.
Or 100% confident.
Yeah.
Or feel like they're 100% right in voting for this person. I was like, that is a good perspective. That's a great point. And so Piper basically wrote this article, not to spoil it for you. You know, I know
you can spoil it for me. It's it'll save me having to read more than of Piper than I needed to.
But basically, he just kind of addressed, almost like without addressing it directly, indirectly addressing this whole notion of wrestling, and he just kind of called out, you know, and he didn't name any candidate by name, and he just called out, but you knew who he was talking about.
Gotcha.
Trump's arrogance. Trump's very unchristlike attitude and how he handles himself, and he says these are sins that are listed in the scripture that bring down nations.
Yep.
And you know, he does address like abortion and other things that are obviously not of Christ either. And so I thought it was very, you know, almost refreshing. And nice. There's a lot of people that were talking about it and retweeting it. It's like, thank you. You know, or, you know, and because Piper is still very, I mean, I don't agree with everything he says.
No, but
then there's, and lately he said some things. I'm just like, dude, I don't think you should
say Piper, that. But in all seriousness, as much as we've kind of gone back and forth with John Piper himself and this kind of a thing, and especially over the years, even just chit chatting, right? Like, Piper actually is one of those guys where there's a lot of his stuff where I'll be like, too much, too soon, too far, something like that. But then there's like an equal amount of stuff where it's like, oh, that's just good.
Yeah.
And I value the wisdom and I value the experience. And I value, so it's like, he actually is kind of one of those guys where I have books that I go, that's actually a really good Piper book. And then he's got some stuff where I'm like, that was a horrible tweet.
Yeah. But he hasn't really changed. This is how he's been forever. Yeah. And I thought it was very refreshing to say, like, thank you. Finally, a well-respected, well-known Christian leader who will come out and say, here you go.
So my question leading into that, then we'll segue right from respected leader, Christian leader, who has been a certain way for a really long time, but a lot of people are just now hearing that or haven't really listened to it. And we probably have to carry this into the next episode because we're kind of hitting time. But Pope Francis, new documentary, basically calling for the church, not as a doctrinal theological position, but as an act of compassion for people outside of the church to be allowed, and that they should be affirmed in their civil unions, same-sex civil unions, which I had a friend of mine, you know, was like, you know, you're one of those Francis lovers, basically, you know, what's up with this, and how can you destroy the, you know, the foundation of Orthodox traditional Christian marriage, and you know, how can he send the church into turmoil? And I was like, well, same kind of thing. I was like, well, if you have followed Francis for any amount of his career, his ministry, you would know that even long before he was Pope, this is actually something he's been quite open about, quite supportive of. You know, it doesn't actually change or impact to some degree his view on marriage within the church for believers. But it also kind of breaks the ice for people who see the church only as this one way of, you know, it's this way or no way. Yeah. And everybody else, you know, if you don't do it this way is you know, bound to the hellfire. So we had a long conversation. He went back and forth. And then eventually he was just like, well, you know, this is the only way and anything else is bound to hellfire. And I was like, well, okay, well, there went that conversation quite quickly. we'll have to talk about it a little bit more, but I was just curious, like, did you have any kind of initial impression, or because it's an interesting time of year for all of these different kind of things between Piper kind of bringing out something that's quite sensible, Pope Francis, you know, kind of bringing out something that is probably I would put into the realm of compassion as opposed to like giving into secularism. I think it's just a compassionate view of the church, which I think the church in general right now needs to have a lot of compassion. I think it needs to be. I think it would be better and more healthy if we were known for our compassion than for just our dogmatic stuff. Yeah. You know. So I just was curious. Like, did you read that one, or did you take a look at that one?
I saw the headline. I didn't read the
whole article. Story. I read that article because I didn't read the Piper one. I think it's the Piper one because I was reading on the. I did more onto the Francis stuff. So
I wasn't too surprised. Like, yeah. I was like, oh yeah, I kind of expected that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I'd love to talk about it a little bit more because I'm interested as we go into the election season. And post-election season, I'm interested to get some thoughts, and I know I've been thinking about this myself, just the idea of, like, what is the church's, you know, if we look at kind of the love justice, you know, do justly, love mercy, walk humbly with your God, that sense of a compassionate ministry, a compassionate community, as opposed to one that's just, you know, boom, here are the lines, cross them and die, you know, which is stuff that you and I have talked about for years.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know a little bit more of what you're thinking on that, but I'm sure we'll have plenty of opportunities as we get into an election and post-election cycle.
Yeehaw.
It's going to be great. It's going to look like Daniel Jones running for a touchdown.
He's running long, and
the legs are going to fall off at about 20 yards away.
We're going to tackle ourselves.
All right, everyone. Hey, thanks for hanging with us this morning. We'll talk to you later. Next time.
See ya.